everybody. What's going on? Rob Cesternino here for our episode number 10 feedback show for Survivor Island of the Idols. Today, we're going to be joined by the great Jessica Leese to answer all of your questions that you have. And boy, do we have a lot about this week's edition of Survivor. So we're going to have Jess on the line in just a couple of moments to talk through all that stuff. I had the Survivor Know-It-Alls on Wednesday night with Shannon Gates, and then had a really nice chat with T-Bird. And T-Bird is such a wonderful person that I get to talk to, and had a really, heart-to-heart with T-Bird about everything that I'm feeling about this week in particular of trying to cover the show. And we got into, so many great things. If you have a chance, check out my conversation with T-Bird. Later on this weekend, we'll also have This Week in Survivor History. Haley Strong is going to join Jordan Kalish and myself. Before we get Jessica Leese on the line, let me take a moment and thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are friends over at Figs. And what Figs does is that they make stylish scrubs that are functional for people who deserve it most. Medical professionals like nurses, doctors, dentists, people who work in medicine and healthcare, all awesome people that are looking for scrubs that don't have to be the same scrubs that people wore 30, 40 years ago that are baggy, not form-fitting, they don't move. I have a medical professional, a friend of mine who works in urology, who called me recently and said, "Hey, I didn't know that you had Figs as a sponsor. I just got a pair." I said, "Of course. They're the best." That my wife, who's a nurse, she got to try her own set of Figs and she loves them too. Figs are infused with antimicrobial properties to control odors. They're ridiculously soft, moisture wicking, and they feature a four-way stretch. These are going to be the scrubs that you wear even when you're not going to work. Figs are made with yoga waistbands and comes in a variety of styles, from classic straight legs to joggers and skinny styles too. Plus, Figs gives back, and you can too. Every time you shop at Figs, they give scrubs to a healthcare provider in need around the world through their Threads for Threads initiative. And to date, Figs has donated hundreds of thousands of sets in over 35 countries. They've got gift cards as well with the holiday season around the corner. So whether you're one of the awesome humans that works in healthcare or someone that wants to say thanks to those deserving folks, Figs is going to make it easy by providing you with a 15% off your first purchase by using your code RHAP. My friend did not use that code, the 15% off with the promo code RHAP. Get ready to love your scrubs. Head on over to wearfigs.com. That's WEARFIGS.com. And enter promo code RHAP at checkout at wearfigs.com. Promo code RHAP. All right, let's bring in our guest for the feedback show. It is a great pleasure to get to talk some Survivor with, of course, my great friend. Of course, you could hear her on post-show recaps and, of course, during our amazing race coverage. Please welcome in the world's first owner of an RHAP tattoo, Jessica Leese. Jessica, how are you?
I'm here, Rob.
Yeah.
It's great to be in there. Here.
Hanging in there.
It's been a week.
Yeah. Anyway, Jess, I really appreciate you coming on to talk with me about everything that's been going on outside of Survivor, Survivor excluded. How have you been?
Survivor excluded. I've been extremely busy, but having a great time as always, covering things over on post-show recaps, doing a lot of freelance writing. I got a real job too. I've got a family. Everything's coming up, Jess, I guess.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate you being here with me to talk through everything with the world of Survivor. So, of course, we had our episode this week, and things were much more normal fare, which I think was many people was a return to normalcy. And, finally, the show is back for a lot of people as well. hey, what do you mean we're going back to normal after what happened on the show last week? How can I look at these people the same way? What were your thoughts on the show that we got this week?
Well, I think I was more or less in that second camp. I feel kind of gaslit about the whole thing, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't fault the people that are in the game, apart from maybe one or two, but I really feel like I don't know how I can go back to watching this show the same way that I watched it before. It just doesn't feel right anymore. It doesn't feel like the same thing. And this has been, I almost feel like I'm kind of been in mourning this week because, you know, I've been watching this show for almost two decades, which when I say it out loud is kind of shocking and sad.
Yeah.
But I've also, it's become such an inextricable part of, you know, who I am and the things that I love. You know, I've been on RHAP now for 7 years. Mm-hmm. It's kind of become a little bit of my livelihood. I don't cover Survivor for you regularly, but I've been writing about it for other outlets. And it really, my love for Survivor got me into this podcasting. And, you know, my love for Survivor has introduced me to all of these people, this great community we have. And it's where we invented the greatest podcasting achievement of our time, the Wandoff. And now it's like in 1 week, something so shockingly awful was so mishandled by so many people on so many levels that it just kind of knocked down a huge chunk of all of this great stuff that we have built and this great love that I had for this show. And after all of this went down and after we watched production make such a hash out of this situation and some of these conversations we've had around the show and hours of trying to unpack what had all happened, I can't just sit back down and be like, okay, we're going to scheme and plot some more. Let's get right back into the game. Mm-hmm. Let's see what there is for reward this week. I can't go right back to it. And I don't know, honestly, it's possible I may never get back to that point. But it was very, very hard this week to sit down and think about it in quite the same way. Like, I don't think I have much of a sense of humor about it anymore. So I don't know where we go from here, to be honest. But I was here. I did watch the episode. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'll be here to see how it all plays out. Mm-hmm. And of course, I might have even taken a week off or so if I hadn't known that I was going to come on and talk to you.
Yeah.
And I will always talk to you. Like, I'll watch 3 hours of C-SPAN if you want a podcast about it, Rob.
No, but not C-SPAN.
It might be the only thing worse. But I, you know, I watched it and I don't feel the same way about this show that I used to. I'm not mm-hmm. sure I ever will again. There's a lot of thoughts that I have around it in general now.
Yeah.
And it's really forced me to confront a lot of my feelings about things that happened in the past on this show that maybe we didn't really unpack hard enough. And then we've kind of over unpacked this situation. It's just, it's a lot to process. And I think we're all still processing it. But, you know, I watched it. I did the homework. I'm here to talk about the show.
You know, I rewatched the episode a couple of times, and you know, the thing is, this was a really fun episode to talk about. You know, in a vacuum, but in, you know, doing my research today, I went back and I was watching parts from the episode last week, and one of the things that jumped out to me was, you know, Jeff at the second tribal council from last week, you know, seemed like so passionate about this subject. And I don't want to say that, you know, Jeff, the host, nailed it, because I think that there were still like issues with how it was handled with Kelly being there and sort of talking around her. But, you know, don't forget that this was
right. It won't be let go.
You're right. I will never let it go. We'll be here until day 39.
And it seemed like that, you know, Jeff wanted to get so into the, you know, the weeds on this, and hey, like let's talk about it. It just seems like such a departure that, you know, Jeff, the executive producer now, as opposed to, you know, where he was at that tribal council.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody let something go harder than Elsa, and
yeah, Yeah.
And there we have it. Like, it was like it hadn't happened. It was like, okay, we're all done with this now. Now it's time for a new episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think we pretty much did let it go.
Yeah. And I'm just talking about, like, in the aftermath now, in terms of, like, the interview that Jeff Probst gave to Dalton Ross, in terms of, like, you know, very, very short answers about that, you know, did not seem to want to jump into it and talk about this. And I felt like that last week, for the most part, I thought that Jeff got, like, you know, not universal praise, but I feel like that people were like, oh, you know, good for Jeff for wanting to, you know, get this out in the open and talk about this.
Yeah, I don't know. Jeff did an okay job.
Mm-hmm.
He did, like, a C-minus job, mm-hmm. which is better than I was going to expect out of somebody like Jeff, mm-hmm. but he could have done better.
Yeah.
I think there was room in there for him to actually facilitate a real dialogue. And the fact that he didn't let Kelly talk was a really big oversight, in my opinion. And this week, to have him just be back to regular old Jeff was very jarring.
Yeah. Let me play a question about this from Morgan Stradling, who has some thoughts and questions about this.
Hi, Rob and Jessica. This is Morgan Stradling. So historically, Jeff has never been one to shy away from controversy, and he's always pushing the characters at Tribal Council to get more out of them. And we saw him do this with Dan 2 episodes ago when Dan just really wanted to drop the whole sexual harassment thing, and Jeff wouldn't let him. However, in the week after that episode aired, Jeff himself has been pretty tight-lipped and very vanilla about the whole situation when he's talking about it, which makes me think that there's some sort of lawsuit involved, similar to what happened with Richard Hatch and Sue Hawk from Survivor All-Stars. Anyway, let me know your thoughts. Thanks.
I mean, again, I don't want to, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. Is that a possibility here? Are people's hands tied in talking about this?
I don't think people's hands are tied. I think out in the real world right now, I don't think people really relish the idea of having to unpack it.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't blame either Aaron or Missy for declining their exit interview this week. I don't think it had anything to do with what CBS was or was not telling them to do.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm so happy that you had a chance to talk to Jamal. I thought that was a really great interview, even if it was a little short. I don't know, honestly, and I'm sure they couldn't comment on it if there was some kind of legal situation going on. I think it's just more that I would guess that production just wants to keep a tight lid on this so that they can save their franchise. Because if we keep talking about this the way that we have been talking about this, and I understand that our fan circles are kind of an echo chamber and mm-hmm. the wider world of Survivor fandom may not take a huge hit, but it also might take a huge hit. And I'm not sure production wants to risk any further damage to the brand, which is why we're getting such terse answers from everybody and potentially also why we're not getting the exit press.
Yeah. On the subject of the exit press this week, just in case you missed it, that Dalton Ross reported that Missy and Aaron were not going to do exit press. Mike Bloom did have an email exit interview with Aaron, and we can touch on that. But let's play this question here. This is from Kelsey.
Hi, Rob and Jessica. This is Kelsey from Northern California. I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts about Aaron and Missy opting out of doing exit press. This isn't something we've seen a lot. I was wondering if you had any thoughts about their decision to do this. Thank you guys so much. Bye.
Now, I touched on this on the T-Bird podcast that, you know, I don't know what they've been through. And I did see on Twitter that there was in one of the tweets that Dalton Ross had made that Davey and Julia Carter had responded about, you know, that we don't know the levels of hate that Missy and Aaron might have got last week and, you know, threats that might have been made against them. You know, we don't know. I just feel like that, you know, talking about these things is only an opportunity to help make the situation better. But, you know, I saw that, you know, people have some really strong opinions about this. I'd say, you know, it's disappointing when we don't get to hear from the survivors, but, you know, let's not get too carried away about it. But Mike had the email interview with Aaron, where Aaron had talked about what was going on with the warnings that were given to the contestants. And I saw that this was really widely circulated on social media today about how, you know, just how much of a warning did everybody end up getting. And so that Aaron described Mike had asked a question. Did the meeting that you had with production play into the day's events at all? And what Aaron said was, our production talk came about 10 minutes before our immunity challenge. My experience in that talk was, Aaron, we want you to know, if you don't feel comfortable or safe, please know we are here for you. We want everybody to feel safe out here. Very out of the blue, I thought to myself, is this standard? Do they do this every season? I have no clue. Just a very vague blanket statement telling me if I ever felt unsafe, I should let production know. Roger that, guys. Now I can go focus on winning immunity. There was never any indication that something was going on, that someone had issues. It just seemed like a standard halftime meeting. That's what Aaron had to say about the meeting from the production staff around that time of the double episode.
Yeah, I read Mike's very surprisingly thorough interview with Aaron. I thought it was really great, and I'm glad that we were able to get a little bit more information on that. And honestly, it's really kind of baffling to ponder, like, what could they possibly have said to Dan? That might literally have been all they said. Like, you know, if you're feeling unsafe, or if you think anybody else is feeling unsafe, maybe because of something someone in this camp might have done. I'm not going to sit here and say that I think Dan had no clue that he was making people uncomfortable with things he did, because when someone tells you to stop doing something, just stop doing it, okay? That's
sure.
All anybody wants out of anything in life and on Survivor. But I can imagine that this, you know, slow crawl across the screen of, at this point, production intervened and gave Dan a stern warning, that might have been all it actually was. And if that's the case, then I'm even more irritated with production. And I'm just baffled by how ham-fisted their handling of this whole situation has been.
Now, I will say that we don't know necessarily, just because that's the conversation that Aaron got.
It doesn't mean
that that's the conversation. I mean, that there was no concern that anybody, you know, any of the guys were, you know, having an issue with Dan. And so that they were having a conversation with everybody. I don't know necessarily what, you know, unless they were going to ask. I think with the integrity of the game, they were trying to name names to Aaron, but just sort of like you have the same general conversation with Aaron. But we don't know necessarily what they might have said with the women versus with one of the guys like Aaron. So I don't know if we should just necessarily leap to that was the same conversation that they had with everybody, and that, you know, Dan was so oblivious. Because I went back and I watched the first episode of the season where Dan had he had his head on Kelly's leg in the shelter, and she talked about how she was a germaphobe. But that was actually very disturbing to end up go back and rewatching. He's like, you know, putting his hand like down like the back of her shirt to give her a massage. And it, you know, it really was like the way that it all ends up playing out. Like I found that to be, you know, very disturbing to watch in hindsight, based on, you know, what she goes on to say about him, and that she did not invite him to be giving her that type of a back rub in the shelter.
Well, thank you for going back and watching that, Rob, so that the rest of us don't have to.
Yeah.
I think if I was made of sterner stuff, I think I probably would have gone back and given it another watch to enhance my understanding of it. But I'm so burnt out.
No, and they have right a whole now, conversation so. About it in the first episode. And we see, you know, Kelly is talking with Janet about it. And Janet also volunteers at the time that, yes, and Molly also feels the same way. And, you know, Dan and Kelly have a whole conversation about it. And he's like, yeah, oh, I get it. So it seemed like that for him to, like, how many times can he feign, like, oh, I had no idea about any of this. I had no, he's talking about me. So I don't know. All right, let's talk a little bit about the game of all this. I know there's no easy way to pivot, but
I'd rather talk about
Okay, great. Well, let me play this email from Josh Spalding.
Hey guys, Josh Spalding calling from New Hampshire. Obviously, last week weighs on everybody's mind, and everybody's thinking about it, and you know how it, last week affects this week, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to take this episode in itself, and if this episode is in any other season, or is earlier in this season even, this would have to be considered a pretty good episode of Survivor, right? I mean, we had a twist with the tribes getting split up. We had two people who were anticipated to go home who didn't go home. We had one massive blindside. We had an underdog find an idol. We had someone who was emerged as a hero come out great out of a situation where it looks pretty dire for her. And we didn't have anybody get screwed over by an idol, island of the idol swap. So, I mean, really, there was a lot in this episode that was a good episode of Survivor if you put it in any other season. Obviously, coming after last week, there's a lot we might not have gotten. But I think looking at the episode in any other season or earlier this season, it has to be a pretty good episode, right? Thanks again, Rob, for all your fantastic work last week. It was a lot of listening and a lot of tough listening, but a really great to hear so many different perspectives and so many different people talk about what went on and what happened and how they reacted to it. So keep up the great work as always. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Josh. Yeah. Jess, if your DVR happened to not record last week's episode, I think you're probably saying, like, oh, this is a really good season.
Yeah, you know, he's not wrong. It was a really fun episode, and there are enough people left in the game that have really fun stories that are great characters. Like, how great was Nora this episode? And yeah. Even Karishma, who is a very polarizing character, I understand, but she had some really, I would say the classic edgic term is a CPP edit.
Yes. What is CPP?
It's at the complex personality.
Yes.
So you know what? It's like you can't say she's getting a positive edit or a negative edit because she got these really heartfelt moments where she's really growing as a person and she's playing a really incredible game, but yet she's also driving everyone around her crazy. It was fantastic to watch.
Yeah. The Karishma and Missy storyline, I think that arc was actually, you know, really fun to follow over the course of the season. From even the beginning of the season where Missy was, you know, telling Karishma what to do, that she felt like she had Karishma in her back pocket the whole way. And then to, you know, have Karishma ultimately do her in, you know, it was really fun television in terms of how that whole storyline played out. Just we went back and forth on the know-it-alls in terms of right move, wrong move to vote against Missy. Did you have a thought on that?
I thought Shannon laid it out beautifully. Like, I was confused going in. I wasn't sure how I stood on it, but Shannon sold me on it. She's mm-hmm. she's right. It was really good. It was 100% the right move, and she's kind of moved me into the Kafishma camp.
Yeah. Yeah, she really made the case that and she did a great job. But I think back to Sandra with Russell, where if somebody tells you they want to take you to the end as a goat, like, I just think of Sandra in Heroes versus Villains, where that same exact thing happened, where Russell's like, I want to take you to the end because I could beat you. And Sandra in confessional tells us, well, I don't know about that. And I just feel like that if somebody wants to take you to the end, like, go to the end. I feel like that's great. And I don't know if Tommy necessarily is going to end up wanting to do that. So I feel like that he was a big threat too, but I understand the, you know, storytelling from, you know, it was so great. I loved how that all ended up playing out. There were so many fun moments also, and Reddit was really good at pulling a bunch of them. The wink between Tommy and Karishma. I had said in the beginning of the season I wanted to track the gifts of the season, and that one is really fun.
Yeah, there were many gif-able moments. I think this season on the whole has really provided a lot of gif-ability, but the winking gif, I think I've watched it about 100 times. It never gets old. It's so great. How great is that?
Yeah.
Why don't you just let's just get rid of the final four fire making challenge, replace it with a winking challenge.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen it, I tweeted it out with the question thread on Twitter for this podcast with Jess. But yeah, Tommy winks at Karishma, and she really struggles with giving Tommy the wink back.
Yeah, my 3-year-old is trying to learn how to wink right now, and it's about, he's worse than she is at it, but not by
much. It's hard. It's hard because, kids can blink, but it's hard to just do one eye.
Yeah, it takes a lot of practice, but I am confident that we will get there.
Yeah. And I mean, the episode opened with Karishma after she had that really rough night, and then she had the rat on her. And this was her experience with the rat.
Oh! I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. The rat just jumped on my face. I'm so sorry. It jumped on my face. Oh, God. I'm so sorry.
Well, he's gone now.
My God.
It was in my mouth.
It's okay.
I'm sorry, Karishma.
Yes. can I point out that Karishma's first reaction when the rat jumps in her face is to apologize to the rest of the tribe for making a scene about a rat being in her face?
Yeah.
that's some consideration there. I'm not sure I would have the presence of mind to apologize to my tribe mates if a rat came into my mouth.
So it was that rough night for Karishma, and then Jess, I guess this is appropriate because you cover The Walking Dead, that we got to see Karishma turned. We saw zombie Karishma wandering around.
Yeah, she was very tired, and I understand those feelings. That's certainly I'm not even out there on the island, and I have felt that way about being with these people for a lot of the past week. But I did find it really interesting the way that she played that. They were threatening to have medical come take a look at her and medevac her. It's like, you know that people don't get medevaced unless they're on the brink of death.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just interesting. She was going to let them go that direction. And she knew full well that nothing would happen if medical came in and took a look at her.
Do you feel like that she was 100% playing possum and that she was just completely faking them out? Or do you think that it was sort of half and half at least?
I think it was about half and half. I'm sure she felt miserable.
Yeah.
I think that is hard to fake. But I also think that she knew what the perception of it would be anyway, so she played it up a little bit. If not necessarily to elicit sympathy, but just to kind of maybe even take the target off her back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, she did fall asleep standing up in a hammock.
That's impressive. I wish I could do that. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, what a gift that would be to be able to just fall asleep in any position, standing, kind of like a 45-degree angle, whatever. That would be a true superpower.
It would. This might be how she got cast on the show. This might have been something she trucked out in the middle of her casting interview. Oh, by the way, I can sleep in any position.
Yeah. Also, one of the things that I've noticed over the course of the season, that Nora doesn't like people that don't go get coconuts. That seems to be that, I forget who was it. I think it was in one of the exit interviews that somebody told me, Nora is just opening coconuts all day long, and she just needs a constant supply of coconuts, and she needs people getting coconuts. And she's very upset that Karishma doesn't really get coconuts, that Karishma was gone for a long time. She comes back, Nora says, you only got 2 coconuts, and she is not supplying Nora with enough coconuts.
I don't know, though. This felt to me a lot like It was tantamount to Nora telling Karishma to go look for an idol. I feel like if you send somebody off into the woods by themselves, isn't that what they're kind of doing?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how would you assume they were not doing that?
Yeah. Stephen Fishback was waiting for somebody to go tell him to go look for coconuts.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, he probably wouldn't have made it very far. He'd probably, you know, get felled by a tree branch, but.
Yeah. But Nora really was starting to lay into Karishma. I feel like that Nora really can read people. Like she really, when she gets going, she doesn't stop, Nora.
She does not open a coconut. She does not go get water. You think she's an 85-year-old woman that has a sense of entitlement. I don't need to kill myself. I'm part of the elderly group. Like, you guys should just take care of me. She's crazy. This is Survivor. We're still here. Do you want to be here? Show us. You know, maybe you should, like, help out.
She had one of those long diatribes about Jamal recently. Like, and these are people that, you know, she then like, turns around, but she's, like, not really that against. But when she gets going, Nora, watch out.
Well, I wish I could remember who said this on Twitter, because it made me laugh a lot and I want to properly credit them. They said that people complaining about people not helping out around camp after the merge is the coldest take.
Yeah. Right. That, you know, Nora was arguing that one of the reasons that Janet should stay is because that she works around camp.
Yeah, if it's 2019, again, this show has been on for nearly two decades. We're coming up on season 40. It has not been about who helps you survive for a very, very long time.
In fairness, and it's just season one for Nora.
That is a good point. She does know who Rob and Sandra are.
She definitely does.
She definitely knows who they are. But yeah, anybody that's watching Survivor in the year of our Lord 2019 and thinking this is a show about people making it in the wilderness, I think they've kind of missed something. And Nora, in other ways, she's surprised me with her game playing acumen, and she's doing much better than I thought she would.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are some facets of Survivor she may not be fully prioritizing in the ideal manner.
Okay. I feel like, Jess, do you want to keep going on Karishma or on Nora? I feel like that I have stuff on both.
I have a lot more thoughts on Karishma.
Okay, let's keep going with Karishma, because I want to talk about her discussion with Missy, because Missy ends up coming up with the plan and they get into it. And Karishma is just not having it. She doesn't want to go along with the Missy plan. And then Karishma storms off and Missy tries to engage her in conversation.
Karishma, you want to talk?
The answer is no.
No, I want to talk.
I'd rather wait until your emotions are all calmer.
I'm super calm, Karishma.
I'd just rather wait a little bit.
How long would you like to wait?
I don't have a watch. Just wait until I feel a little bit more comfortable.
Okay.
Just a little bit.
Okay.
She doesn't have a watch.
They're not allowed to bring watches anymore.
Yeah. Karishma, after she talked about how that Missy needs to be to calm down.
I'm sorry, little girl. I'm going to need you to calm down.
Karishma went full Kidz Bop Karen on Missy.
Calm down. Calm down.
Why do you have a sound clip of Kidz Bop Karen?
Well, we did talk about Kidz Bop Karen on News AF, but I did cut that specifically for this episode. I did go watch Kidz Bop Karen again.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it'll be useful again in the future.
Yeah. But that was so great. And when she tells her, I don't have a watch. Karishma versus Missy. Did you think that Missy was out of line?
Well, I think Missy just missed a crucial aspect of gameplay, which is that you can't just put someone in your pocket and assume that they're just going to go along with whatever you say, even though you treat them like garbage for the other 9/10 of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how any aspect of what Missy was pitching was appealing to Karishma.
Yeah.
She didn't sell it to her. She didn't make it seem like they had any kind of deal. She didn't even try to make a deal. She's just like, oh, well, you know, we were on a tribe together in the beginning and you're still with me, right? Like, why? What's in it for Karishma? We're not just all going to fall in line to give Missy a win. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't just hand her the W. I know the W's taste great, but it's like you have to make Karishma feel like there it is advantageous for her to go with you. And she really did a terrible job of that.
Yeah. Missy really, you know, did not keep it a secret that she wanted to have Karishma go to the end and be a goat for her. And she really did a bad job of, you know, making her excited about that. And I don't think we have to look too far from, you know, to see the statue of Boston Rob, who did a much better job back in Survivor Redemption Island with Philip, where that Rob identified early on, okay, Philip, going to go to the end with Philip. And he really like kept Philip very excited about what they were doing the whole game, where Philip never felt any animosity. He loved Boston Rob.
Well, I think the key difference between Philip and Karishma is that Karishma has an incredible amount of self-awareness. Mm-hmm. She knows exactly who she is and what she's about and what she's good at and what she's not good at. And I think most of the rest of the players have underestimated this about her. They just assume that because she's not particularly good at the game in the ways that other people around her are, she's not terribly great at the social game, but that doesn't mean she's not smart, and it doesn't mean she doesn't know herself. And I think if you're going to take a goat like that all the way to the end, if you're going to cultivate your goat,
yeah,
you have to get a goat that doesn't necessarily know they are a goat.
Yeah, you can't treat them like a goat.
Yeah, you can't treat them like a goat. And somebody... Or you do treat them like a goat and you're very candid with them and you have a conversation where you're very real with them, which I don't think Missy was doing a whole lot of that either. Like, I think that's a conversation you could have with Karishma where it's like, yeah, I know how you're perceived. You know how you're perceived. Maybe that works for both of us. Maybe we can work together on this. And I don't think Missy had that conversation either. I think she just assumed that Karishma didn't know what was going on and didn't have any perception of what anybody really thought about her. And that's where Missy failed.
Yeah. To go back to Rob and Philip, you know, that relationship looks like, hey, Philip, you know, you're really my number one and, you know, don't tell anybody. But, you know, we're secret best friends and don't tell anybody. And that's the way that you pull that off. But it seemed like that there was no point where Missy was ever nice to Karishma to make Karishma feel like, oh, I'm actually Missy's number one. Like Elizabeth is getting sold a bill of goods, but, you know, I'm really who Missy wants to be sitting there at the end with. She was just like, okay, you know, you're lucky and I'll keep you around for as long as I can.
Yeah. And I think if you're in a position of power, you forget that everybody's vote counts exactly the same.
Yeah. Also, I think that this swap also ended up being a big part of it, because I think that Missy might have looked at Karishma as a vote in her pocket pre-swap. But I think that once they got to the merge, I have a feeling that Missy didn't give too much thought to Karishma because they didn't need her number, that Karishma was on the bottom. She was going to be one of the people that got voted out. And now all of a sudden they end up in this situation where, okay, that they need her vote. And now it was like, okay, well, hey, Karishma, you're back to being a vote for us and we're going to take out Tommy tonight. And Karishma was like, hold on, well, you know, you didn't have anything to do with me since we got to the merge. You were part of this new, you know, post-swap Vokai. And, you know, Missy probably didn't do anything to cultivate that relationship the whole time after the merge.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. And I think Missy may have been banking on the fact like, oh, we were out there together in the beginning. That's got to count for something. And they were even in an alliance together for a hot second. But there's so much game that has happened between now and then. And I also think I think the point is very valid that maybe Karishma might have been more receptive to it if she had not found an idol this episode, which I think kind of lit a fire under her and got her more excited, made her realize that she has some leverage in this game and she can actually pull some moves off, and she doesn't necessarily need to just be in someone's pocket.
Yeah. The charisma with the idol. Let me play this other clip because the pocket is not where charisma keeps the idol.
Thankfully, I have an immunity idol in my trusty bra over here.
My trusty bra over here. What is it, like a utility belt?
Yeah. Does she have a bra she trusts less? I mean, I know that's a spectrum out in the real world, but since when do you get to bring two bras on Survivor?
Yeah, it makes it sound like it's like her lucky undergarment.
Well, I guess any undergarment you're wearing while you're not getting voted out of Survivor is your lucky undergarment.
Mm-hmm. Right. If it was a different article of clothing, like I've got the immunity idol over here in my lucky cargo shorts. Trusty cargo shorts. Either one.
Yeah, I've got it in my lucky socks with my kid on them.
Okay. Let me play a question from Brent from Minneapolis about charisma moving forward.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Jessica. This is Brent from Minneapolis, and I really want to talk about goats. Obviously, in this season, we're talking about charisma, and I want to know if you think it's possible for a player to un-goat themselves. Like, once you're a goat, can you un-goat? It's obvious that Missy, you know, felt like charisma was going to be her zero vote finalist in the end. And honestly, I think Tommy and Lauren are feeling the exact same way, that they can bring charisma over to their side and then they've got a goat. The goat's just moving back and forth. But I think the edit has been really interesting for charisma. She's been seen as this like buffoonish character, unfortunately, where she's like tripping over things and she's talking about the weather or other things. And people are laughing at her or they're annoyed by her. You know, Nora obviously talks really disparagingly about her in the beginning of this episode. And we even see charisma kind of falling asleep, what looks like standing up against the hammock. And then Nora finally pushes her out of camp to go do something useful, I guess, and get coconuts. But then we get to see charisma find an idol. And when we see her on the Tribe of Five, you know, I think as the audience, we're really expecting her to screw that up and at least play her idol poorly, especially since we saw Janet misplay or play her idol when she didn't need to. But there was a moment where, like, you know, they pan from person to person when Jeff says, if you have an idol, now's the time to play it. And we see all these faces and we're waiting to see Charisma's face. And we see the cool, calm, collected Charisma that she promised us in the very first minute of this season. Are we seeing Charisma ungoat? Can anyone ungoat? Has anyone ever ungoated? I really want to know what you think. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Very good question, Brent. Long question, but a good question of can Charisma ungoat herself?
It's an interesting thought, and I think Brent has just sold me on something that almost lights a tiny spark of excitement again. Because if this is the end game we're getting, this thing that I've just conjured in my head, if this is the end game we're getting, I might be back on board. This might be the one thing that saves Survivor for me.
A Charisma win.
Yeah, Charisma win. And not just a Charisma win, a full-fledged Charisma redemption arc.
Mm-hmm.
Where she started the game in one place and she hit rock bottom and then she came back and she found an idol. She rallied. She found herself. She discovered the well of love that she has for herself and the well of love that her family has for her. She used that strength. She drew on it. She found a social game and she fought her way to the end and turned in a brilliant lawyerly tribal council performance. Charisma win might save the season for me. And I don't know if I would term this an ungoatening so much as I don't think a goat is a goat. I think everybody is Schrodinger's goat until the point where you are at the end at Tribal Council. I don't think you become a goat until you go to the end. Everybody else is a potential goat. Everybody else has the goatential. You simultaneously are and are not a goat, depending on who else has you in their possible endgame scenarios. So I think anybody could be a goat at this point. Some people are looking at Charisma with the idea that she could become the goat, but she can't ungoat because she's not the goat yet.
Mm-hmm. And Karishma is very good at these tribal councils. That I do think that she could do well in the final tribal council. I'm just wondering that, you know, there's so many players that are in the game that have like this negative perception about her. Where people like Missy and Nora, you know, feel like, okay, well, she's not doing anything. We're dragging her along. And I mean, Nora was literally dragging her along when they did that challenge in the sand. I just wonder, you know, what would it take for people to come around on Karishma?
If she's the one that puts them on the jury, mm-hmm. if she could point at every single person there and they're like, well, Karishma, you didn't do anything. She'd be like, well, what did I do? I put you there.
Yeah.
You're where you are because of me. I think that is a powerful argument if she spins it the right way. And, you know, there's always the jury that's bitter, that doesn't want to reward the person that kicked them out of the game. But there's also, if it's spun the right way, and I think if anybody can spin it that way, a lawyer can.
Mm-hmm.
If it's spun the right way, you can respect that and you can see if she can draw a very clear picture of what she's done in the game, then I think she's got a shot at it. I don't know that it's a huge shot. I think it is a very, very outside chance. I don't think she makes it to the end. And if she does, I don't think the jury will reward the kind of game she's played. But what if they did, Rob? What if they did? That would be so cool.
It would be wild, especially where Brent references that how she opened the season, how she was going to be cool, calm, and collected Karishma. And I really thought another interesting part of her arc was when she got to the swap, she talked about how she was in the that her, you know, her parents had the arranged marriage, and she wasn't sure if, you know, her relationship with her husband was right for her. And then she sort of like had like a realization in this episode about how it's like, you know, I've been trying this game to find anybody to work with me, and I realized that I have somebody at home who loves me. And I thought that that was sort of a really under the radar part of her story, which has come to light this week.
Well, there you go. Complex personality. Like, there. Yeah. Why are they showing us that if Karishma is pure buffoon? She's not.
Mm-hmm.
They want us to have that hope. They want us to like that about her. They want us to think she could really pull something out. She is transforming. And why do they want us to feel like Karishma is transforming if not to see her spread her wings and collect $1 million at the end?
She has not been to the Island of the Idols. And I've said a couple times this season that I do think that Karishma is the person this season that most embodies Sandra, anybody but me. I think that she's been the person who's willing to go, you know, any which way on these votes. And I really would love to see Sandra have that one-on-one talk with Karishma.
Well, Rob, this, you probably have some voicemails about this, but this does bring me to something that I'm finding irritating about the Island of the Idols.
What's
which
that?
Is that that is the conversation I want to see. That's the sort of thing I wish the Island of the Idols was there for. I wish it was a think tank. I'm so sick of like Survivor School. I want Karishma to go to the Island of the Idols and Sandra to sit her down and say, okay, so we've been watching you. We're seeing what you're doing. And here's how you're perceived. Here's what we think you could be doing differently. Here are the people we think you should be reaching out to. What do you think about that? It's like the family visit when somebody's spouse gets to come to camp and spend the night. And it's like you got that extra person in the game who doesn't have the immediacy of the pressure of having to play. It's a neutral party that you can bounce ideas off of. And you see people get a fire lit under them after they've had a chance to just like talk things out with someone who's not directly being affected by the game, whose only role is to support you. What if that was Rob and Sandra's job? What if you go to Island of the Idols and they're actually literally coaching you and mentoring you and giving you advice on the situation that you specifically are in? That would be great. That would be so much better television than what we're getting.
Yeah, you make a really good point that because that was kind of like what we were advertised that this was going to be, where, okay, oh, Rob and Sandra are coaches and they'll get people to be like more aggressive and people won't be sheep and just, you know, follow somebody to the end. And, you know, they'll get everybody, okay, oh, you should be thinking about this, thinking about this. And yeah, I think that that would be good. And not just like, you know, oh, Jamal, you got zonked today.
Yeah, it's like Jamal opened the piece of paper and there was a donkey inside it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that would be better if we could really like sort of like, okay, let's, you know, let's sit down. And they're like consulting.
Yeah. I mean, the one downside I can see to that is that I think we would have a lot of tinfoil hat types pointing out that this could be construed as production interference. Because what if Rob and Sandra give really, really good advice to one contestant and then less good advice to another contestant? Are they seen as favoring the one they gave good advice to? Or if one piece of advice works and one doesn't, you know, is that favoritism? Are they, do they have their thumb on the scales in some way? So that's a hard thing to get around. But man, that would be so much better than what we're getting if they actually... It actually seemed like there was any reason they were sitting in the snug playing Mystery Science Theater Tribal Council 3000.
Yeah, because the lessons that they've done have not really, you know, borne any fruit. It wasn't like that there was anything that they taught. Unless I'm missing something where they taught somebody a specific lesson and then it really ended up paying dividends other than, you know, you win the prize that they're offering.
I mean, it could yet. We did witness a fire making lesson that might pay off.
I guess so.
Wait, what if that's the long game? Like, what if that's the only reason that that happened? Like, they give Elizabeth a fire making lesson, and then she like wins final four fire making, and that was literally the only Boston Rob and Sandra payoff we get.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me bring in an Elizabeth question that maybe Elizabeth could make it to the final four. Let me play this question from Lexi.
Hey, Robin T-Bird. It's Lexi from Wisconsin.
This question was originally for T-Bird.
I see.
So I have a question about Elizabeth and her game going forward now that Missy and Aaron both went home. She was super upset at Tribal Council and said out loud how Aaron was a number one for her. And then Missy goes home and it was already clear that they were very close. So do you think this helps her game because all her closest allies went home and she'll be a free agent that people can use for a vote? Or do you think she's the next one out the door? Let me know. Love you, T-Bird.
So yeah. Are we saying she's a Mike Holloway or an Elizabeth Hasselbeck?
What's the distinction? What's a Mike Holloway or an Elizabeth Hasselbeck?
Mike Holloway is somebody who loses all his allies and then is like gunned for throughout the rest of the game, but manages to pull out a win in the end.
Yeah. And Elizabeth Hasselbeck is just somebody that they like so much that they don't want to get rid of her.
She limps along until the last pot. She's the last possible option to vote out. And then they just vote her out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like there's a better analog of somebody who ends up kind of getting the rest of their allies yanked out from under them and then causes chaos. Maybe a Chris from Vanuatu is an obvious example where all of the other dudes get voted out and he just kind of rolls along and like flips back and forth and gets the women to take each other out.
Yeah. In Elizabeth's specific case, though, do you think that she ends up being a target sooner, or do you think that they sort of forget about her now that Missy and Aaron are gone?
Well, I think she seems to be not necessarily perceived as a leader within that alliance. So it is conceivable that people will forget she's around for a couple of votes, or they might just decide they just need to completely extinguish that entire threat. Mm-hmm. Before moving on to something else. But I'm not sure we've seen more strategic chops out of Elizabeth than I thought we were going to from the beginning, because she did come into this game as someone who wasn't terribly familiar with it, but she seems to have picked it up pretty quickly and she aligned with the right people to get her this far. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that she manages to kind of wedge herself into some of these sub-alliances and cause some damage before she goes out, but I don't see a path to the end for her.
See, I do see a path for her, but I think that it involves Elaine picking her back up, where when they first got to the swap, I thought that she was Elaine's closest ally, and it seemed like that Elizabeth had, you know, she was tight with Missy, and then she was also tight with Elaine, and then she seemed to be then all in with Missy, and seems like that Elaine was more on the outs. But now with Missy gone, I could see her ending up with Elaine. And I feel like that Elaine, we saw that relationship that she had with Karishma this week. And if Elaine can pick Dean back up and get Dean back on their side, like I really do feel like that there is a chance that we could see a reemergence of original Lyra.
Well, that's if Elizabeth isn't too salty at Elaine, because you will recall that she was instructed to kill her slowly and methodically.
Yes, yeah, but, you know, she's going to listen?
I think she's going to be upset.
Yeah.
I don't think, if this reconciliation happens, I don't think it happens overnight.
Yeah. I think Elizabeth was really out of it this episode. That, you know, we saw her in the beginning of the episode, Jess, where she got rained on all night. And, you know, I've said for years, like, that's like the one thing that doesn't really translate to watching the show at home. It's just how much it sucks when it rains on Survivor. And especially like these nights where it rains, where you're cold and you're freezing and you're wet. And you also, you can't sleep. I mean, it is, you know, as much as you are tortured as a survivor, where it's just a, you know, an endless night of just being, unless you're Karishma and you can, you know, maybe sleep standing up. It's just, you know, the worst part of being on Survivor. And so Elizabeth was out of it. Then she ends up getting, go to that tribal council. She sees Aaron on the jury, and she seemed like she was really stunned about that. And then somehow this was her at the tribal council, where they had a whole thing where Missy and Karishma were supposed to be fighting, and they asked Elizabeth about it. And she said,
"But I was there with Missy and Karishma today, and I thought it went fantastic. I think we bridged the gap between both of their personalities."
Was she not on top of the plan?
Yeah, this seems like an incorrect read, no matter which way it was going.
Yeah.
It's either, okay, what we saw transpire in the edited for television version was Karishma just kind of shutting Missy out and not really wanting to entertain the offer. But we also saw this conversation like, oh, we're going to pretend to fight. And either way, like whichever version of that is the actual version they're going with that is actually true, it's going fantastic and we're working with Karishma is not the response that Elizabeth is supposed to give in that moment.
Yeah. Elizabeth might be out of it.
A little bit. Or maybe she's playing fourth dimensional chess.
Yeah, that might be it. Okay. Jess, let me take a moment and thank a sponsor here before we go any further. And I want to mention a new sponsor to the show, which I think you might like. It's called Musician. And Musician allows people to have the ability to learn an instrument over a internet-enabled device like a phone or a iPad. Do you know that 7 out of 10 adults wish they played a musical instrument, but many never do because they think it's too late for them to start, too expensive, or they don't feel like they have the time? Well, not anymore with Musician, the online music education platform rethinking the way that people learn music. You could learn the guitar, the piano, bass, ukulele, or even singing. How about that?
That sounds like so much fun. I mean, I'm a musical person, and this is right up my alley.
The award-winning technology actually listens to you play and gives real-time feedback on timing and accuracy. No need for chords or special equipment. With Musician, you learn to play your favorite songs faster than ever and have fun doing it. I got the chance to try it out. We have Dominic in piano lessons, and they are expensive, and this is a much better way to go. It works kind of like Guitar Hero or Rock Band, but for real instruments. Musician gives you a 24/7 access to step-by-step video tutorials and world-class educators. So if you're wanting to learn an instrument or simply want some help getting back to playing, check out Musician. You can get an extended 14-day free trial of their Premium Plus package at musician.com/RJP with unlimited lessons and unlimited songs on as many instruments as you want for 2 whole weeks. Go to musician.com/RJP to start your free trial today. That's YOUSICIAN.com/RHAP. That's musician.com /RHAP. Okay. All right. Jess, if we ever get back to a wand off, there'll be a lot of people, new people can get in.
Yeah. Well, in the next live KIA event, I want to assemble the RHAP orchestra.
Orchestra. Okay, great. Will Brett LaBelle still get to sing?
He can sing, or maybe he'll sign up for this musician thing and take up an instrument.
It'd be great if we could get Jamal also. I feel like that he was like, I think like he played an instrument. Was he, what was he? He was just like beating on like a stick.
Yeah, he's definitely, I want him for my percussion section.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, Jack did a lot of that a cappella stuff. Yeah. So
yeah.
Maybe we just need, like, we'll all take the musician voice lessons and we'll form the RHAP chorus.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah, that Jack and Jamal, did you watch any of the Ponderosa videos with them?
I caught them performing together a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's nice. I feel like that 20 days at Ponderosa, I feel like that seems like a dream to me.
You know, it's probably better than going on vacation in Patagonia with Rudy and Tina.
Yeah, yeah. Miss Rudy. Okay.
R.I.P.
All right. So, Jess, let me ask you a little bit about Elaine. And when I went back and I watched the episode a second time, I was really, pretty amazed with Elaine. Matt Cerrone had a question about her. And let me bring in the great creator of MetsBlog.com, Matt Cerrone.
Hey, Rob, it's Matt. I have a question about Elaine, who I feel like up until the last minute of this past episode, I think she had been playing a really good game. She bobs and weaves. She makes people laugh, kind of like Sandra. She further throws people under the bus only when someone else does it first. And yet last night, she openly threw herself under the bus in front of the jury, by admitting to Missy that it was, her, that was she that flipped. I don't understand why not let Tommy take the hit. He was the one up until that point. Missy had to think was at fault because of him looking her in the eye and basically saying, I'm sorry. Only then does Elaine get up and put on a show. I don't get it. What did I miss? And why might this have been a smart, not stupid thing to do? Thanks. Bye.
Jess, the whole fallout of Missy getting voted out was so bizarre all the way around.
I've never seen someone go out of the game quite like this. Like, you don't usually get to address people directly right after you get voted out, like before your torch has even gone out. This was very new to me.
Yeah. I mean, usually people are so stunned, they just like pick up their torch and just leave. And, Missy was just like, stammering around because it was like she didn't know what hit her.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think you're allowed to be stunned when you get voted out, especially in a big blindside like that. But it was very strange. It was like the first time we saw somebody get up and like whisper to somebody else during tribal council.
Yeah, it took her a couple minutes to like collect herself and like, oh, I guess she picked up the wrong torch. She had this weird exchange with Tommy.
Came after me.
I didn't come after you.
What?
But she did. Like, okay, here's the thing about all of this, like this voicemail question, this exchange we just heard. Everybody who's sitting there either voted for Missy or Tommy. Mm-hmm. So if you're Missy, you did vote for Tommy. You did come after him. And also, I think, of course, Tommy's going to vote for Missy because he can't vote for himself. He's got to vote for one of the two people.
Right.
So I don't think we can necessarily blame him for being the catalyst here. And I think Missy probably was more interested in who had flipped. And she probably kind of already knew the answer in that moment. Mm-hmm. Like you see the sliding puzzle clicking together in her head before Elaine even says anything.
Yeah. But did she think it was Elizabeth?
Yeah, I don't think she thought it was Elizabeth. Like, color me crazy, but I kind of think I would not suspect Elizabeth in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me bring this back to Matt's question, which was for Elaine to then say to Missy that, that she was the one that did it. Did you think that was a bad gameplay move for Elaine?
Well, why is it a bad move? She's taking credit for it right then and there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not terribly stealthy, I guess, but it's also like that's 10 seconds she can save in final tribal council.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's in front of the jury. I think that it was, you know, a pretty good move. I mean that where it's a, in terms of overall winning the game, I think what it could make a bad move is where we see so much on Survivor where, especially this season, oh, that person's looking like they have a shot to win. All right, let get them voted out next. And so I think that we could see, and you know, basically like all throughout the 30s on Survivor, we see somebody make a big move and then they end up being the next person to go home because then everybody targets them because they have a good shot to win then.
Well, can I just say I love the way the pendulum is swinging in that regard. I think that's mm-hmm. really fun to watch because one thing that I think made the first half of the season really compelling is that all of the people that you would have looked at them on paper and said, these are the ones that are going far, like that is not what's happening here. And so we get all of these crazy characters that would have gone out pre-merge in any other season. And that's fun every so often. And I like that the person most likely to win is the person we got to get rid of immediately. I think that's a really fun strategy to base your season around. And
yeah.
I like that it's got this motley crew of people left and people that I think in any other season might not have a shot to win. Like a Karishma might actually have a shot to win in a season like this if these are the people we're taking out. So that's fun.
Yeah, there's talk in the preview about the GOAT army. And yeah, we do have a lot of people that we could talk about as, you know, these potential GOATs. And I do think it's interesting that could they band together?
I love the GOAT army. I'm here for the GOAT army. Mm-hmm. I know that we've gotten blowback on the expression to be here for something, but can I be here for this at least?
Yeah. The only thing I'd say is that is Dan part of the GOAT army? Because I kind of feel like he is.
Oh, yeah. Can I root for everybody in the GOAT army except for Dan?
Yeah. I mean, is Gabon the closest we've come to this?
Yeah, Gabon is a pretty solid example of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we saw in Gabon people using strategies that had worked in just about every Survivor season up to this point, and then they just really didn't for Gabon.
Mm-hmm. If the GOAT army takes hold here, what does this say about Robin Sandra's presence here on this season where we end up with somehow we brought Robin Sandra in and we have like the most like upside down backwards Survivor season and ending crew?
Well, you know, maybe if Robin Sandra had spent some time actually coaching these people as we were promised, some of them might have been better at the game.
Yeah. Nick Snow has a question about Elaine as well. Is Elaine getting enough credit for her strategic gameplay? She seems to be underestimated in that regard by both the other players and the viewers. Jess, what do you think about Elaine's game?
Well, I really loved the way that T-Bird phrased this in your interview with her, because I think she was spot on about it. I think Elaine is underestimated a little bit because the kind of intelligence that she espouses is not the kind of like Harvard MBA, like super, super cerebral kind of smarts.
She didn't go to fancy Harvard parties.
She didn't go to fancy Harvard parties. But she is smart and she's extremely perceptive and she's good at things that I don't think you can even necessarily learn. And I think that is a kind of intelligence that sometimes gets lost on the average viewer. And so, yeah, I 100% think that Elaine is being underestimated, especially in the intelligence arena.
Yeah, I really could see Elaine pulling this thing out. I'm starting to see that sort of crystallize. I could see an Elaine win.
The only thing that I would say does not point to an Elaine win is the edit. Like, mm-hmm. I think there were huge chunks of time where we just didn't see any Elaine whatsoever. And yeah. I think that makes it really hard to think that she has the potential to win because she disappeared from the story for a huge chunk of time.
She has disappeared, but when she comes out in a big way. The first episode, she was all over the first episode, the episode where Jason got voted out, where she went to the Island of the Idols, that she was like the star of that episode. And then, you know, she has a big episode here this week. And I feel like even more so than Tommy, I feel like that Elaine was responsible for getting Karishma to flip over.
Yeah, I think that's definitely how the edit portrayed it as well.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think Elaine has a shot at this thing. What about Tommy? That, you know, people say that, you know, Tommy has looked really good. And on paper, he does seem like that he's going to be the person that, you know, if you're watching the show, seems like that he is best positioned to take this thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at the edit, I think a lot of people are saying that Tommy has the clearest winner's edit of anybody. Like, we haven't seen him do anything terribly wrong from either a strategic gameplay point or a, you know, basic humanity point, which is not true of everybody that's still in it. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a solid guy, and I think he's not making mistakes in the game, and I think he's gotten very, very lucky at a couple of points.
Yeah.
So I think Tommy is probably, if I had to rank people by how likely I think it is they could pull out a win, I'd have to put Tommy at the top. Also because Tommy is the least interesting winner that we could get this season of everybody that's left.
Yeah. The one thing, though, that really jumps out when we're looking at, like, these nine people that are left that... I mean, if it's super obvious to us and we're talking about like all of these goats, that do they realize it there? Is it possible that they say like, okay, well, Tommy's definitely going to win if we don't get him?
Nobody has said that in the game, though, and which I find really curious.
Well, Missy did say that this week. Missy was saying that that's why they had to target Tommy, because that, you know, he is a teacher and then he would win if he got to the end.
Yeah, he's a teacher. He has Lauren in his pocket, or she has him in her pocket. They're a tight duo. Mm-hmm. Need to split them up. And I think it was really either way, either person that got voted out of this particular conglomeration of people, I think was somebody that was getting voted out because if you don't get them now, they're going to win the game. And so we didn't get him now. Is he going to win the game?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I do feel like that Missy, Lauren, Tommy was, ended up being like quite the love triangle. I don't mean love in the like literal sense, but we saw where that there was, you know, Missy, you know, had wanted to get rid of Tommy. She wanted to free. She felt like that Lauren was going to be another person with her if she could ever get rid of Tommy. And she never was able to. She had a couple of shots at it. She wasn't able to get Tommy out of the game.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely tried. But and I did think it was interesting that Missy said, like, even before the game started, that Lauren was somebody she wanted to work with, and she was hoping that they'd eventually come around to being on the same tribe so that they could work together.
Yeah. If Missy and Tommy were both drowning, who do you think that Lauren would have saved?
Tommy.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, oh. I guess, or drowning in the sense that, like, whoever falls under the water first loses the game of Survivor.
Yeah.
I don't think drowning in any literal death sense. I don't know. It might be different. We might have another Good Son situation on our hands. Which I know, Josh Wigler's favorite movie of all
Shout
time.
Shout out Ronnie Barta. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think, like, if Lauren is in the game and has to choose one of these people, I think she chooses Tommy every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's go back to Nora. We were talking about Nora, and then we ended up going back to Karishma. Let me play you a voicemail question about Nora from Connor from New Jersey. And let me play Connor's message about Nora.
Hey, Rob. Connor from New Jersey calling in. Got a question about Nora. I want to get your guys' thoughts. Obviously, she's a spooky player. I would assume that towards the earlier half of the season, we feel like she was getting the Debbie Phillip edit. But I feel like as the game goes on, she is getting better at the game. I think she's picking up some strategy. She's picking up some social cues. And I think she's making moves. I wonder if she'll kind of fall into the Sierra from Token Sheens, Jay from Millennial Gen X, a little quirky, unusual character in the beginning, has some faults, but is able to pick it up by the end. I'd be interested to see how she fares. Want to get your thoughts.
Okay.
All right. Well, first of all, Connor, I want to thank you for taking the time to call us from your submarine. I understand that the minutes are really expensive on those giant phones with the satellite hookup.
Also, Connor says that is she going to be like a Sierra from Token Sheens or Jay from Millennials versus Gen X? I wouldn't
have put those in the same cons type. That's a great, that's almost as good as a Mike Holloway or Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Okay, but to Connor's point of, is it coming together for Nora?
It's interesting because when we were talking about the Karishma redemption arc, I feel like maybe we're also... I think the Nora redemption arc is something else we could talk about as well, because I could see Nora as being another one of those people that started out like really clumsy and like dancing when she shouldn't be dancing and alienating everybody on her tribe, but then slowly developing the kind of social acumen you need to go far in the game because she's not dumb. She definitely can see other people. I think she may be missing a little bit of the same self-awareness that Karishma yes. has, but she is very much on that same kind of journey. The one thing I would say is different is we don't really know a lot about Nora's life outside of the game. We haven't gotten those confessionals from her. So I
she
think
dated a guy that was like Jason.
Yeah. But I think that's about all we ever heard about her. Like, she's kind of a cipher outside of the game, which, you know, on Amazing Race, that's more important. If somebody's talking about their family at the beginning of an episode of Amazing Race, you know they're either going to win the game or they're getting eliminated that night. So that's interesting. We're not getting a lot of the Nora origin story, but we are getting a lot of moments where she is playing the game extremely well and she is getting accurate reads on people and she's on the right side of everything. And I think it is equally possible that we get a Nora goes all the way kind of story mm-hmm. as it is possible that we get a Karishma goes all the way story. And either one of those scenarios, I think I'd be pretty okay with at this point.
Yeah, it makes for the fascinating discussion of who's the more likely winner, Nora or Karishma?
I would say Karishma at this point.
I agree with you.
I think we know Karishma as a human being a little bit better than we know Nora. And I think Karishma is a better underdog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also think the thing that you keyed into about the self-awareness, that I do think that that is huge in the final tribal council, to be able to know how you are perceived by the other people that are in the jury, because I feel like that is a key trait. If we go back and we take a look at all of the different people that have been in the final twos and final threes, I wonder how often the person with the better self-awareness ends up being the person who's the winner, the person who's able to sort of like read the room and know what everybody is thinking about them and be able to have a self-image that's sort of consistent with what everybody already is thinking about them and not just be out there talking about how they're the mastermind whenever it's like, no, you weren't.
Yeah, well, I think conversely, some of the worst tribal council performances we've ever seen have been somebody thinking that they're coming in to a jury that is excited for them, that is excited about the game they played and sees them as the hero. And then you come to find out through the course of the tribal council that that is really not the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know in my own personal experience with Jenna and Matt in the Amazon, I would say that I feel like that Jenna was much more tapped in terms of how she was perceived by the people that were in the jury than Matt was in terms of knowing how he was perceived by the people that were voting.
Yeah, well, I think that if you watch that tribal council back, I think that's pretty painfully apparent. Like, that's one of the all-time worst.
Yeah. So, yeah, I do think that, you know, if Karishma can get there with the right people, then I don't think that she could beat somebody who has like a strong resume. But, you know, I just go back to where, you know, Sandra was, you know, up against like a Russell, somebody that was like universally disliked, or to use the Nora, you know, would you rather be hated or indifferent? You know, if there's somebody that's there like a Dean or somebody that just like nobody cares about, Dean, Detective
he's like
Kowalski.
He's like the Mick Trimming of this cast.
Yeah, then, you know, I think she's got a shot at this thing.
I think a Karishma Nora Dean finale would be really excellent. I almost want to see that now.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you a question from Yale, who wants to know, where does Nora eating a coconut in the middle of the night while reassuring Karishma rank on the peak Nora scale?
Why do all of Nora's best moments revolve around eating fruit?
Yeah. She loves watermelon.
Yeah. And I like that she's got the coconut. Like, she, no wonder she needed Karishma to go out and look for more coconuts, because she ate them all in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's always opening coconuts, Nora.
Yeah. Apparently that's just her thing. And again, mm-hmm. I think the Nora origin story would be really interesting to know, but we're not getting it. So I don't know why she likes to do that so much.
Mm-hmm. Maybe do you see Nora opening a smoothie bar after the show?
The coconut is not a great ingredient for a smoothie. Like, you can put some coconut water in your smoothie to kind of thin it out, but I feel like it doesn't add as much as you would think it would.
Okay. Are you a big smoothie person, Jess?
Not a huge smoothie person. I like a smoothie from time to time, but the problem is when you chop up all your fruit, then you're not getting the like blood sugar boost that you would get from just eating it normally. So I'm an eat normal fruit normally person. I'm not a mush it all up and do all the hard work with a machine kind of person.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm learning today. I didn't know that.
Yeah. You've never done Weight Watchers.
Okay. Jess, let me bring in a question. And I've gotten this from a couple of people this season. And so let me address it. Here's Cliff from Binghamton. Wants to ask a question about the footwear at Tribal Council.
Hey, Rob and Jessica. This is Cliff from Binghamton. My question has been on my mind for a few weeks now. Something that has been bugging me. And I continue to notice with every week, why is no one wearing shoes at Tribal? Rob and Sandra walked into the little hut with no shoes early in the season. Now the jury is not wearing shoes. Now, I did notice that Jeff actually had some sandals on this week. That's the first time I've seen any footwear on any of the contestants or anyone at Tribal, but this is something I need to have discussed. It's keeping me up at night, and I need answers. Thank you.
Oh, this poor man. He needs to sleep. We got to talk about this.
I'm not sure if it's Cliff from Binghamton that keeps calling with this question, but I've gotten this a couple times on the feedback show.
Someone's, hey, yo, Robbie-ing yo-ing you about the shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. Originally, it was brought to my attention that Rob and Sandra both don't wear shoes in the hot box. I don't know if maybe their shoes make too much noise. I don't know what the issue is here. But according to Cliff from Binghamton, nobody's wearing shoes at Tribal Council.
Is this something to do with the floors at Tribal Council? Like, they just mopped and they don't want to mess them up?
Yeah. Is this a thing?
Well, I know we had a conversation earlier in the season when I did the B&B, when we did our legendary Buff or Snuff segment, where we were talking about the sartorial choices of the various contestants. We talked about the fact that Dean has a special pair of sneakers that he almost never wears that have remained pristine. And I thought, well, maybe those are his Tribal Council sneakers, and he like has to wear them only like when you can only wear like a white soled shoe on a gym floor.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's not even wearing them there, then I don't know what those shoes are for. But also, I think it's gotta be something to do with like the, you don't want to wear your hard-soled grody shoes on this nice floor of Tribal Council, I guess.
I would guess if this is a thing, then I would say that maybe that the getting to tribal council like might be like a wet landing where that you know, when they're getting to tribal council.
Sure.
And maybe, you know, they're allowed to wear shoes, but maybe somebody's like, hey, just, you know, leave, you know, don't get your shoes wet, or they don't want to carry them in and then put, you know, wet feet back in the shoes because then the shoes take forever to dry. If I had to, you know, speculate about that, maybe that would be the number one thing that would come to mind.
That makes sense, Rob. And over my day job, we've produced some videos that teach people how to do a wet landing. So
yeah.
I should have thought of that. Maybe they all just leave their shoes in the boat. They just don't want to carry them in.
I never did a wet landing before until I arrived in the Amazon when I got to where we were going to our base camp, like basically like the pregame Ponderosa. And I was absolutely terrified because they said, okay, you know, we're going to get out of the boat and then you're going to walk across the water and make sure you, you know, shuffle your feet because there's stingray that are in the water. It's like, oh my God.
Scared. Stingray and the piranha and the candiru. There's nothing in that water that's not going to kill you in some way.
I was never more terrified in my life than the first night they brought us to the Amazon, because we got there and it was like, you know, 45 minutes until it was just going to be completely pitch black. And they brought us into, like, we were just like, you know, went from like the airport to this boat, and we got there and I was just so scared out of my mind. And then they like brought us like on a walk through like the jungle floor to go. Then they put us in boats to show us that there are really like crocodiles out there. And I was so petrified.
So how much orientation time did you get before the actual quote unquote marooning?
In my case, I feel like it was about 4 or 5 days. It was a lot. It was a long time. I don't think they do that kind of wilderness training with survivors now. I don't know how many days they're out there before the game starts, but we were there. I think we had like a press day, and then there might have been like a day where we met with the producers, and then I think there was like 3 days of jungle training.
Yeah, they kind of, I think one of the reasons they moved to Fiji was so that they don't have to do that anymore. It's just like, this is a coconut, this yeah. is the rice,
yeah.
This is how you chop bamboo. Have fun.
It was so boring. It was so boring where it's like, okay, we're going to watch these, you know, jungle guides make a shelter and like how they, this is how they did it. Oh, okay, cool. And I think that Matthew had like a notebook and he was like, he didn't already know all that stuff.
Well, I think it's worth noting how thoroughly terrible the shelter is this season. Like, they didn't yeah. even do the thing. Like, usually they have the thing where they make a platform and they put the bamboo up on the platform. These people are all sleeping in the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no wonder they were all miserable when it rained all night. They basically were sleeping in a giant pool.
I kind of thought that they were going to go live with Rob and Sandra. I thought, well, once they showed us that giant shelter, and I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe at the merge, they're going to go live with Rob and Sandra. And like, well, what's going to happen with that thing? It's like Boston Rob used all these resources, built this giant house, and what are we going to do with it? Are they just going to, like, then on day 39, Rob is just going to burn it to the ground?
Well, and they might use it in season 40. Like, yeah. what if the whole reason that they were out there was that Rob was going to build the shelter for season 40?
Oh, maybe. Getting it ready. Okay, maybe. I didn't even think of that. So we'll see. But yeah, the Rob and Sandra is so underutilized here in the second half in the merge.
Yeah. Oh, P.S. I think if we're going to talk about raw materials that went into building those giant heads that barely get remarked upon that we haven't even seen in 3 episodes. I need more giant heads. Like, what was the point of the giant heads? Like, we got one good shot of them. You could have CGI'd that for all I know.
Yeah. Would you like to see them green screen the giant heads in instead of the practical giant heads?
Yeah, I think green screened giant heads might have saved them a little bit of money.
Yeah, or maybe they could just do miniatures, like sort of like what they would do in like an old Star Trek episode.
Yeah, or Or famously in This Is Spinal Tap when they built the Stonehenge set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that they just have then like a Robin Sandra like perspective, like really far away from it.
Totally. Like, I don't know. For all I know, that's what they did do. Yeah, have we seen anybody like try to pick Rob's nose?
Yeah, we need like the giant heads like in the foreground. They'll have the camera like right up against them. Like, oh my God, these giant heads are so huge.
See, if Survivor really feels strongly about saving their franchise,
yeah,
then we need a lot more giant head humor in the next episode. Like, just have them like have the visitor to Island of the Idols like climb up the head and like do a north by northwest off of Rob's nose. I'm into that. We need some levity around the giant heads. Mm-hmm. Maybe make everybody feel good about the show again.
Could we blow them up?
Like destroy them?
Yeah.
And then can we like have Sandra's head lying on its side in the beach and then you like run up to it going, "You maniacs." So many good uses for a giant head. Like, yeah, this is the true waste of this season.
Yeah, I mean, they had it all right there. There's so many other things they could have done with them.
They're just so much potential is just squandered.
All right,
I'm so mad at this season.
All right, this is, speaking of, you know, we're so mad at the Island of the Idols. Let's play this one. This is from Rainbow. Rainbow is not happy about the Island of the Idols. And let's hear what she had to say.
Hey, Rob. Rainbow from LA here. I am just so aggravated still about Jamal getting voted out because of the Island of the Idols or them not helping him at all. The fact that he found that advantage, I feel like if production had wanted Jamal to stay, they could have come up and with something on the boat right over there. I mean, it was so cold. It was so nothing. They just really hosed him. And they could have just said, oh, here's an idol, Jamal, because we wanted to have a better redemption story there since it's been such a low. And I just wonder, do you think it was intentional from production, you know, Jamal specific, hosing him so bad? I'm just still really furious about it because he's such a gem and I feel like we were robbed. And thanks. I'm not done being mad about Jamal being out yet. Thanks.
Yeah. We love Jamal. It wasn't right what happened to him at the Island of the Idols, but it sounds like what Rainbow is looking for is to fix the show to help Jamal.
Yeah, and I never feel like the show is fixed. I feel like the show is unfair a lot of times, and I feel like the show probably needs to examine some of its mechanisms.
Yeah,
sometimes, but
Survivor.
But I go so far as to say Survivor is fixed. I'm not prepared to say that.
Oh, I think if Survivor was fixed, I think it would be a lot different right now.
Yeah, if Survivor was fixed, like maybe Survivor is fixed to some really dark end that we don't know about.
Oh, no.
But I think if Survivor was fixed, we'd probably see a very different conglomeration of people out there. And
who's writing this script if it's fixed?
Yeah, I'm not nominating these people for a writing Emmy.
No, I see this more in Big Brother, Jess, where in Big Brother, there are a lot of twists. And so when things happen that benefit the fan favorites, you know, the fans love the twists. You know, this was great. And if something happens that ends up not going the way of the people, and you know, people are ready to riot and go crazy. And so, you know, when we want our favorites to, you know, benefit, like I think that a lot of people are willing to, like, let me bend the rules this time.
Well, I think if I had to say whether I thought it was more likely to fix Survivor or Big Brother, I would 100% say it is much easier and more likely that they would want to fix Big Brother. They would want to rig Big Brother in favor of people, because the difference between Survivor and Big Brother is that on Big Brother, you get real time feedback on who is the fan favorite and who people are going to be angry if the person doesn't go home. You could slip people advantages very easily because they're contained in this little like hamster cage. And on Survivor, I think, and I think we saw this writ large last week, they don't know how things are going to necessarily play before they finish the season. Like what you get is like the, you then have to craft the story after the fact. And so I think you can't look at this group of people and say, oh, well, that guy there, everybody's going to love him. He's going to be the most popular one. We better make sure he goes far. I don't think that's something that's possible. And I think a lot of the best characters and the most memorable people we've gotten in the last few seasons have not been people that production would necessarily have pointed to at the beginning of the season and said, oh, that person is going to be the fan favorite. Like, I don't think they necessarily can make that call. I think they get a group of good people and they hope one of them is awesome, but I don't think they know who the awesome person is every single time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that they were trying to screw Jamal, and I don't think that they necessarily were going to switch things out because it was Jamal that got the Island of the Idol. So, I don't think so, Rainbow. All right, let's take a question from Henry from Albany, and a few different people had some version of this question for you, Jess.
Hi, Rob and Jess. Henry from Albany here. As a big fan of Bull Survivor and The Race, and your guys' coverage of both, I was wondering who from this season you would want to see as a team for a potential future crossover Amazing Race season like they did last season. Thanks, and bye.
Okay. Jess, do you see an Amazing Race pair from this season?
Well, I think, Rob, the last couple of times that I did Survivor voicemails, I told people to stop sending this question in because it was hashtag basic. But that was all prior to the CBS reality showdown that we got last season, which turned out to be one of the strongest seasons in years. And it was a whole lot of fun. And I am sure they're going to do it again because it did very, very well.
Yeah.
So I think we have to watch every CBS reality show from here on out with an eye to who is going to show up in the next reality showdown. And so to that end, I am happy to answer this question and every subsequent asking of this question until we get Reality Showdown 2.0.
Okay. So do you see a pair?
I think Jamal and Jack would be a strong pair.
That's what I was going to say also.
That's kind of what Twitter was suggesting the other three or four times I got this question over the course of the week. I think that would be a very good pair. I think, I don't know. It's hard to say because we don't have a lot of tight duos on this show that you could point to and say that would be really fun. I would like to see Dean and Kelly be a team, and then I would like them to say in their like backstory segments that their bond is that Kelly's friend was Dean's ex-girlfriend and that's how they know each other. And I want them to have to put that on the little chyron at the bottom when it tells about their relationship.
Yeah. just what about Robin Sandra? Could Robin Sandra end up or does Robin Amber trump? And I totally forgot that Rob played the Amazing Race with Amber. Could Rob go back with Sandra though?
I don't know. I don't know if Rob is prepared to Rachel Riley it with a new partner in the next reality showdown. And as much as I think it would be excellent television to see Sandra on The Amazing Race, because it's like all of the things that Sandra doesn't like.
Yeah.
And she would respond to them the way that we like to see her respond to things. But yeah, I don't see Rob and Sandra doing very well on The Amazing Race.
Like, no, I actually think that Sandra might be really good. If you go back to the first episode of Survivor Pearl Islands, when Sandra was like wheeling and dealing like in that market, and you know the way that I know that she's like an extreme couponer also. So I kind of feel like that's like maybe the adventure stuff does not really play to her strong suits, but I do feel like a lot of these like shopping tasks kiosks and going around to like these different markets and finding everything. Like, I think that's right in her wheelhouse.
Yeah, but there's one of those per season. Can you see Sandra like carrying a 50-pound bag of flour across a field, or I don't know, learning an agility course? I these don't seem like things that Sandra has any patience for. I mean, true, she is multilingual and she has strong persuasive skills. I think those are underrated skills on The Amazing Race, but I've seen her in physical challenges, and I think there's enough physicality on The Amazing Race that you need at least a little bit to get by.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm not sure Rob is the person that can bring that. I think Sandra with somebody young and extremely fit could be fun, but I don't know. Sandra and Rob, I want to get them like color commentating The Amazing Race. I don't know if I want them running it.
Yeah, I kind of want to watch Rob and Sandra like watching movies. I also feel like that the two of them together, like trying to figure stuff out. Like, okay, who is that guy? Is that the guy that's the killer? What do you think? No, I don't think it's him. I feel like
could we have a Rob and Sandra DVD commentary track?
Yeah, Mystery Science Theater of just have them watching different things.
Rob and Sandra watch The Usual Suspects.
Sure. I think any of those things
Rob and Sandra
would be fun.
Watch Memento.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, that was so that he's writing all those notes to himself. Yeah, I think that's what's happening. So that would be good. Okay. Let me play this question. Odefe from Nigeria has a question for us about something that Missy said at the end of the episode.
Hello, this is Odefe from Nigeria. My question is, which players in survivor history have been killed slowly and methodically? And what exactly would that entail? Thanks.
Okay, so that was the request from Missy. I need you to kill Elaine. And I need you to do it slowly and methodically. And look, I know people are down on Missy after the episode last week. I think that Missy was a very interesting character on the season. And just like the way that she just was would say things like that, like so calm, that I think she had some really amazing lines of dialogue over the course of the season. And that was one of them. I need you to kill Elaine slowly and methodically.
Yeah, I mean, that line was decently dope.
Decently dope, yes. So can you think of anybody that was killed slowly and methodically? I think I have somebody.
I want to hear your example, Rob.
Okay. I would say that I think John Mish was somebody that was killed slowly and methodically by Natalie Anderson back in Survivor San Juan del Sur.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because just like that, you know, this is Missy wanted to be avenged like Jeremy, and Natalie said that, you know, those fools, I'm going to get them back. But she couldn't just come right out and do it. She had to like move the, you know, the chess pieces around and like vote out Alec Christie by accident and get to the point. She like shared a bed with them one night, or she gave them a reward to sort of lull them into a false sense of security. And then finally she got it down to the final six. And then she, you know, got Baylor on board and then took out John Mish.
Yeah, it's when you spin it like that, it's really a beautiful and underrated move.
Yeah. And she like plotted this from the moment that they voted out Jeremy, that she was going to get her revenge on those guys.
Yeah, I mean, she's like Rick Grimes with the Terminus people.
Yeah, she came back and she took every single one of them out. And so I mean, that was pretty slow and methodical. But yeah, for the most part, I feel like that, you know, this type of justice, you know, when you get back at somebody, I feel like on Survivor, usually it's pretty swift justice.
Yeah, I think on Survivor, you never serve your revenge cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to come right back and do it as soon as possible. Let's see if I have any other things from this episode. And this was sort of a crazy moment at the tribal council when Jeff was I saw a still frame of this. Jeff was talking about, you know, we were pivoting from what Missy had said about the African-American contestants winning immunity. And then, okay, and now we have to vote. And this is how Jeff described that.
And now, once again, we're going to go from something that seems outside of the game, and we're going to right back into names on a parchment.
And he really looked like a crazy person when he was talking about names on a parchment.
Names on a parchment.
There is really a fun game this season to watch Tribal Council and pause Jeff Probst and just look at the screen you get when you pause it, because there is really, you'd never get a bad one. And I feel like Reddit has had a field day with a lot of these Jeff Probst stills, like the one where he's saying, I will not let it go. And he's like practically clutching at his heart. I think that one's a very fun one as well.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that Jeff is like downing like a carafe of coffee before every single one of these tribal.
Well, I guess anything to get yourself through it. This is a rough season for Jeff Probst. Let's be real.
He's worked up. He's worked up. Okay.
He's turned.
All right. Jess, anything else about this episode that you want to touch on?
Well, Rob, I do have a general comment, and this is probably more of a meta comment at this point, because I was thinking about, like, through the first 10 to 15 minutes of this podcast, I was thinking, mm-hmm. Oh God, how do I even get through this? I'm so burnt out on Survivor right now. I'm just don't even know how I can continue watching it. It already, you know, it killed the wand off, which is the best thing in my life. And we've had so much conversation around such a difficult couple of weeks. And I feel like I see a way forward. I'm not done being angry with this show yet. And I don't know that I'll ever fully get back to the place I was with it.
Mm-hmm.
But over the course of like having this conversation with you, I'm reminded of all the things that I loved about this show and about, you know, how much it's meant to me over the years, like not just my time on RHAP, but like even before that, it was one of those things where if I was out in the world and I met somebody that watched Survivor, it was like, okay, we are instant friends now because none of my friends watch this show. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe somebody cares about this thing I care about. And it like made me like somebody more that they liked the show. And sometimes examining like my feelings for the show over the years, it's like there's probably times when it didn't earn that love and times when I probably should have examined it harder. But, you know, it's a very long relationship that I'm not saying I'm back on board, but I'm not ready to completely throw it out. I'm not ready to mourn its death yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over the course of talking this all out with you and having fun discussing the show, I feel a little bit less awful about the whole thing. So that's been helpful to me. And I'm sure that I'm going to get a couple of tweets from people about how low energy I was at the beginning and how, you know, if you hate this show so much, why are you still watching it? Which is a familiar refrain that I'm sure you recall from your Walking Dead days. And P.S. Rob did hate it so much he did stop watching it. So thanks for that.
But I needed a break. I'm going to come back and watch.
I know you are. And you will be happy you did.
Yeah.
But I think I found that energy again, and I think that's just a testament to how good you are at what you do, that, you know, we're back around, we're back in it, we're talking about it, and we're not hating life.
Yeah. Jess, well, I really appreciate that, and I did have fun talking about the things. I mean, there are fun things that are still happening in this season, and, you know, this week has been, you know, very, you know, a real challenge to try to cover the show, because I definitely feel like that, you know, that there are people that are like, okay, well, you know, I don't want to hear any more about this. And for a variety of reasons that they, it's either too painful or that they feel like that it is, you know, whatever, everything that's already had to been said has been said. And there's also, you know, people that are, you know, not ready to move on. And so that's been such a challenge with trying to cover the show this week. But I did have a lot of fun getting to talk a bunch of this stuff through with you tonight.
Yeah, I'm never going to be fully ready to move on from this, but I think there's a way forward at least.
Yeah, and there will still be more to come. There's going to be, you know, more, you know, as more and more people are able to speak more freely about what happened, I'm sure we'll only learn more about this situation, you know, for the better or for worse. And so in the meantime, you know, this is a Survivor podcast, you know, gotta keep talking it through.
Yeah, I mean, you got to go back to an office if you can't do that.
Yeah.
Nobody wants Rob to get a day job.
Right. And I was talking about this with Nicole last night about, you know, like I was just like discussing my, you know, how conflicted I am with talking about the show and, you know, trying to do the right, you know, the right thing. And, you know, that she had made a, you know, a good point about the, you know, there are a lot of people that, you know, they look forward to the shows and that, you know, I have a duty to keep, you know, keep going. And, you know, for the people that this is like a, you know, a highlight to have these shows, you know, that, you know, I need to keep going forward for those people. And so the First Lady of Podcasting is very wise sometimes.
Yeah, I think she's got a very good point. There's a huge community that has popped up around Survivor that has really ceased to be about Survivor. It's just Survivor's the thing that brings us back here every week, but they're really here for you, Rob, and they're here for the community that you've created.
Well, again, I very much appreciate that, and that I don't know how to respond to things like that. So I will just thank you again. Jess, I know this is Thanksgiving week. You're an avid baker. Do you have any pies or cakes that are coming special this week?
I got the request for the double chocolate bourbon pecan pie that my mother-in-law loves. So I will be doing that again. And then I think I got to have at least one other dessert. And I'm kind of torn between apple and pumpkin. And so we're still figuring it out. And I'm trying to find things that my son can help me with because he's very into kitchen implements and he likes to help. So anything he can help with, I think, is, you know, help without creating more work for me. So we have a fun week of desserts planned, and I'm always on dessert duty for Thanksgiving. So that's kind of one of the highlights of the year.
Okay. Do you post the pies when they come out on social media?
Yeah, I usually have a photo on Instagram, and I think this year will be no different.
Who's the better baker, you or Ally Lasher?
Probably Ally Lasher. I don't get much practice these days, so I'm a little rusty.
Would you be willing to compete in an RHAP podcaster bake-off?
The next time we have a live show in New York,
I saw on Twitter that as of 2 years ago, Josh Wigler is out.
All right. Well, I will fully sponsor an RHAP bake-off event.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to see what other podcasters will throw their hat into the ring.
Totally. Like, I've just thrown the gauntlet down. Any of you all that want to be in on this, you've been invited. It's like the Royal Rumble, but tastier.
Okay. All right. Jess, thank you so much. Of course, that you could hear Jess and Josh Wigler talk about the mid-season finale of The Walking Dead over on postshowrecaps.com. Jess, did you notice that I have added the latest from post-show recaps in the sidebar of robisawebsite.com?
I did not notice that, but I feel so much more appreciated now.
Yes, I've been trying to, you know, further marry the two sites for a long time, and we just added that. If you're on robisawebsite.com, that you'll see the last couple of posts from post-show recaps, so you can see what Jess has going on with Josh covering The Walking Dead and Mr. Robot coverage and the Lost rewatch with Mike Bloom and Josh Wigler as well, all on postshowrecaps.com. And of course, Jess, it's not too long until you and Mike Bloom are back on the Star Trek beat.
Yeah, we have an exciting lead up into the launch of Picard planned. And I think we're both very excited for the upcoming Star Trek content. And then I was looking at, I kind of plotted out on a calendar all of the podcast work that I have to do in 2020. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's something coming out every week for like at least the first half of 2020. And that's not even counting whenever Amazing Race is coming back.
Well, Jess, when Picard comes out, I'd love to be on a episode recap. It doesn't have to be the first one, but I am a big Jean-Luc stan.
Well, you're welcome anytime.
Okay. All right. I'm excited about that one. All right. Of course, you can follow Jessica Leese on Twitter. She's at Haymaker Hattie. And anything else you want to point people to, Jess?
I should point you over to primetimer.com. If you click on features, you'll find a number of really interesting articles about everything that's happening in the TV world right now, including a lot of content that I'm writing, including I have a piece coming out next week about the Thanksgiving Day Parade. And then this week I wrote about a new anthology series that's hitting Netflix called Dolly Parton's Heartstrings. Mm-hmm. And it was just a fun dive into like which songs are being covered in this series and what actors are featured and where do you know them from. And it's a lot of fun and I can't wait to actually dig into the series.
Jess, what are you writing about the Thanksgiving Day Parade?
It's mostly about like what purpose does it serve in the greater sphere of the Thanksgiving holiday? And also, I learned a lot of really interesting facts about the difference in the coverage between the two networks that air the parade and why those differences exist. And that was the original pitch. And they were like, that's not as interesting as you think it is. So please fold it into a bigger piece. But I'm like, yeah, huh, it is interesting. So
yeah, Nicole is a big Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade person. And, you know, I find it very boring in terms of watching it. And I just feel like that there's maybe 10 seconds of stuff that I want. Like, I feel like that the move is to DVR it.
That is definitely the move, or to flip back and forth between the two networks covering it, just to kind of catch little glimpses of things. But I don't think you are fully meant to be paying attention to the parade. I think it's on in the background and it provides something for you to talk about if your family starts talking about things you don't want to talk about.
Yeah. Who else airs it besides NBC?
CBS.
CBS airs the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade?
Yeah, come on, Rob. CBS is your bread and butter. You should know this.
Sorry about that. Okay. All right.
CBS coverage has its own particular charm.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll have to read my article to find out what I really think of which network you should be watching.
Okay. Yeah, I've never watched it on CBS. Sorry, guys. Okay. All right. Jess, thank you so much. Really appreciate you spending some time with me tonight. We are going to be back with our next episode of Survivor coverage when we talk about this week in Survivor history. Haley Strong is going to join Jordan Kalish and myself. And then on Robin Akiva Need a Podcast this weekend, we're going to be talking about season 3, episode 7 of Golden Girls. Jess, are you a Golden Girl?
Oh, 100%. I stan the Golden Girls. So I think, or as my roommate and I called it when we lived together in 2003, we used to call it G-Squared. And we would have marathon viewing sessions of it whenever the like 6-hour blocks would air on Lifetime. We'd be there for it. So I'm a big fan, and I will be excited to hear what you have to say about the series.
Are you a Dorothy, a Rose, a Blanche, or a Sophia?
I'm a Dorothy that wishes she was a Sophia. What about you, Rob?
I think that I am, I feel like I'm probably Dorothy. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like it's easier to map in Sex and the City because on Sex and the City, it's not like like the old one.
Yeah, that's true. But
yeah, I don't know. I feel like I used to have like a good 1-to-1 for Sex and the City and Golden Girls, but I'll save that for Robin Akiva Need a Podcast this weekend. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.